Welcome to Tori Mecha Nafiomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Yecheskel Perek Mem Hei, Chapter 45. Once Yecheskel finishes explaining the measurements of the Mikdash in Prakim 40 through 42, and the Kavod of Hashem and the role of the Kohanim in 43 and 44, he zooms out and turns his gaze away from the Mikdash and begins to discuss the land that lays around it and outside it. The Perek begins with a theological understanding of the land that's under discussion and a deeper understanding of the role of land in general. We start, Pasuk Aleph. V'hil pilchem et ha'aret benachala tarimu truma l'Hashem kodesh min ha'aret eretz chamisha ve'esrim elef orach v'rochav asara elef kodesh hu b'chol gvula saviv. Okay, so we're talking about this massive piece of land, which is 25,000 by 25,000 units large, we don't know exactly what unit, that's going to be divided basically into three pieces with something on the outskirts. Okay, here's what the pasuk means. When you divide the land by inheritance, meaning when you divide it into nachalot, you shall offer an offering to Hashem, meaning there's going to be a truma of land, an offering of land, and the length shall be the length of 25,000, and we're going to learn later that this is 25,000 reeds, and the width will also be 10,000, so different sections of it. It shall be holy in its entire border around. Okay, so the parak begins with a discussion of the division of land, a topic that will be discussed in depth later in the Sefer. The land will be divided among the Shvatim differently than it was in the time of Yehoshua, and that's going to be the topic of parak 48, the last parak. However, for our purposes, there's going to be one parcel of land that's going to be called truma, a donation. Like the actual truma, that's a part of your regular crop that's then sanctified and donated to Hashem, the land itself will have a truma, a part of it that's sanctified and donated to Hashem. The notion of the land having a truma, says Rav Isaac Breuer, shows that like when you give truma and denkhala from your harvest and from your dough, you show that you really do not own the entire harvest. And this idea of truma of land shows that you also do not own the entire land, not just this portion, but everything. In his words, let Israel be aware from the very outset that the soil on which it sets foot and of which it takes possession is holy. And that applies to the entire Eretz Yisrael. Now, this area or certain areas will have a 25,000 by 10,000 measurement, and the unit of measurement is not specified until Pasuk Gimel, where we learn that we're measuring by rods. Now, rods, you can imagine, are about 6 feet or so. So we're talking about a massive area. And this area will be divided into three parts. One part will be for the Beit HaMikdash, which will encompass Har Bayit, as well as an open area around it. And in this section, the Kohanim will live there around the Beit HaMikdash. They will build their houses in this space, and they actually live there, all the Kohanim, surrounding the open area that surrounds the Beit HaMikdash. A second section, detailed in Pasuk Hey, verse 5, is the living area of the Levium. The land is described as La'achuza Esrim Lishkot, as a possession for themselves for 20 chambers. If you remember, we saw the word Lishka when Yecheskel was looking at the different sections that are in the Chatzer of the Beit HaMikdash in the courtyard, these different chambers. The word La'achuza is a loaded word in Tanakh. It's the word with which Hashem gives Abraham the land of Israel. The word that Abraham that's used when Abraham buys Ma'arat HaMachpelah to be his own, a possession for a grave site for him, and the word that describes the way people go back to their land in the time of Yovel to their possession, and it's the word that describes why people must help their poor relatives buy back their land if they're forced to sell it. If your brother, if your relative becomes poor and has to sell his possession, so his close relative is supposed to come and buy back that land for his relative, something that we saw happen in Megillat Rut. The word achuza is a full possession, a God-given one. And now this land is called an achuza. It's divided and granted fully by God. Each section and then each person in this section gets their possession as a place to live forever. To understand the scope and size of this lamb, now we're talking about the section for the Levium, the Malbim explains that the words Asara Lishkot, 20 chambers, actually is 20 cities. And he says that this land, which is really a huge piece of land, will be divided into 20 cities of Levium. So just to give you a sense that we're talking about a very, very large piece of land. And this is just the section of the Levium. In biblical times, there were 42 cities of Levium, as well as the Ari Miklat. And now the Levium, along with the Kohanim, are concentrated into specific areas in which they all live together. And this follows Yechezkel's theme of the separation between Kodesh and Chol. So they're not scattered, they're all together. The third section of this truma of land, this donation of land, belongs to the city of Yerushalayim. Pasuk Vav, Va'achuzat ha'ir titnu chamishat alafim rochav ve'orach chamisha ve'esrim elef l'umat trumat ha'kodesh v'chol beit Yisrael yehiyah. So this possession of the city that you're going to consecrate will be actually half the size of the other two, because it's 25,000 by 5,000. And this will be a Trumat Kodesh, a holy donation. L'chol Beit Yisrael, yeah, it will be for all of Bnei Yisrael. So it's going to be the same length, but half the width. And this is actually relatively far from the Beit HaMikdash, even though it's on the same Truma of land. And it too, though, is designated as Kodesh. The Malbim explains that the phrase L'chol Beit Yisrael Yehiyeh, as all of Israel, all of Bnei Israel, will have some portion in Jerusalem. It will not belong to one particular tribe, like it did in the time of Bayit Rishon, where Yerushalayim was in the Nachla of Yehuda. But here says the Malbim, Yerushalayim is going to belong to everybody, and everyone will feel that it is actually their possession because they have some type of representation in it. So just to picture these sections, so imagine these three sections as three very long strips of land, one above the other, meaning one to the north of the other, going from north to south. The northernmost one is for the Kohanim, which includes in the middle of it the Beit HaMikdash and Har HaBayit. And then to the south of that is the Levium, and to the south of that is the city of Yerushalayim. And Yechezkel alluded to the structure when he first arrived on that tall mountain, and mentioned in Perek Mem, when he arrived there in his vision, and he mentioned that the city was below him to the south. What comes next in the Psukim is written in a very mundane and seemingly boring way about measurements and portions, but it contains a stunning revelation about the structure of the country in the time of Bayit Shlishi. And the Pasuk goes as follows, Pasuk Zayin, verse 7. Vilanasi mize umize l'trumat ha'kodesh l'chuzat ha'ir, p'nei trumat ha'kodesh v'al p'nei achuzat ha'ir, mipa'at yam yama umipa'at ked makadima, v'orach l'umat echad ha'chalakim migvul yam el gvul kadima. So we're talking really about measurements of land, and we're talking about the land that's dedicated to the Nasi, the prince, or the political leader. In other words, the Melech, the king. And the Pasuk says that the land of the prince will be on one side and the other side. It will also be called an Achuza, and it will also be Trumat Kodesh, a donation that's holy, and it will be on the west and on the east, and it will be in length equal to the other portions. Okay, so what do we mean? If you can imagine that these three portions of land are boxes, each one getting progressively further south, and then think about the land to the king, which is to the east and the west, and that will be the place reserved for the king. Now, to realize how revolutionary this is, just remember that when Shlomo built the Beit HaMikdash, he built it right next to the palace. They were on the same complex. They were so close that in Yirmiyahu 26, when there's a mob at the Beit HaMikdash trying to kill Yirmiyahu, the Sarei Yehudah, the judges, they hear about it and they just walk over to see what's going on. They walk from the palace to the Beit HaMikdash because they are right next to each other. And Yechezkel noted this also when he said that the kings would, that the complex of the king kind of butts up against the Beit HaMikdash, that they almost like share a wall. Their doorposts are touching each other. And Yechezkel really does not like this. And so they're not so here in the time in Yechezkel's vision. In his quest to separate Kodesh and Chol, Yechezkel imagines the complex of the king to be very far from the Beit HaMikdash, and adjacent to all three sections. And he also splits it. It's not one complex, but it's one to the east and one to the west. So the administration of the country, the political administration, is not all together, and they are not in the center. They are on the sides. And there's also buffers between the king and the Beit HaMikdash, the king who, by the way, Yechezkel does not call the Melech, but the Nasi, the prince. Or the Nasi, actually the real interpretation of the word Nasi is like a leader or one who holds others up. There's a buffer, which is the Kohanim and also the empty area that's around the Beit HaMikdash. And the Beit HaMikdash, we know, itself has a wall around it. So the Beit HaMikdash is really kind of closed off from the political world. And Yechezkel is clearly making a big shift here, away from the way the Beit HaMikdash and the politics were run during Bayit Rishon. Not only can the Melech just not walk over to the Beit HaMikdash whenever he wants, not only is there just almost this fluidity between what's happening at the Beit HaMikdash and what's happening at the palace, and what's happening between the religion and what's happening between the politics, but no, they are very, very separate. And so too, the politics and the religion will be very separate. You would not be able to mix them. The king would not be the one to build or administer the Beit HaMikdash, and it will be very clear that the king does not legislate things that have to do with religion. The Kohanim do. And we know even the Kohanim are very specified, these Kohanim B'nai Tzadok. Furthermore, the king does not get any of his possession or his land from the people. Instead, he, just like the Kohanim and just like the Levim, and just like each Shevet, he gets his land directly from Hashem. It cannot get bigger. That is his portion. That is his truma, and it is his achuzah. It is possession, and it is special for him, but it is a donation. And we talked about this idea of land that Rav Breuer spoke about, that the idea that you give truma of land means that the whole land really belongs to Hashem, but especially the truma belongs to Hashem. So these four pieces, the land of the Kohanim, the land of the Levim, the city of Yerushalayim, and the place of the Nasi, they are the truma. They are what's Kodesh to Hashem. They're the actual truma, what's Kodesh to Hashem. And that is this a message that Yechezkel has, that you're living in the land, but you certainly don't own the land. The land belongs to Hashem. And actually, so do you. You also belong to Hashem. Your ideals, your whole lifestyle should be dedicated to Hashem. And we're reminded of the warning that Shmuel first gave the people when they asked for a king in Shmuel chapter 8, where he says to them in Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, Vayomer Zeyi Mishpat HaMelech Asher Yimloch Aleihem. You want a king? Do you want to know what a king's going to do? This is how the king is going to treat you. He's going to take your children, take your sons. They're going to have to run in front of his chariot. He's going to make them into his officers over 1,000, officers over 50. They're going to have to work for him. They're going to have to farm for him. They're going to have to make weapons for him. He's going to take your daughters. They're going to work in his kitchen. He's going to have to take your land. He's going to take your fields. He's going to take your vineyards. He's going to take your olive groves, even the best ones. He's going to take it. He's going to give it to his servants, meaning the king has the ability to take your land that's given to you as your nachala and add it to his if he needs it for his servants. And this becomes a big topic in the time of Achav when he wants to take the vineyard, the Karim, from Navot. So this becomes a big discussion. Is Achav, is it aligned with this psukim in Shmuel? Which clearly he does the wrong thing, Achav, in that story. And then Shmuel finishes this up in Pasuk Yichat, and he says, "V'za'aktem b'yom ha'hu milofnei malkechem." You're going to cry out to me on that day because of your king, asher b'chartem lachem, that you yourself chose you, meaning says Shmuel, against my advice. "V'lo ya'aneh Hashem etchem b'yom ha'hu," and Hashem will not answer you on that day. Shmuel is very against the institution of kingship, at least in this case, although Shmuel's ideology about kingship is definitely complicated. But here he seems very against the institution of kingship because he feels that it's ripe for abuse. The king will take what you have either for his own aggrandizement or even not. He'll just take it because maybe he needs it for his administration. Maybe he thinks that that's what's best for the country. And then when you suffer because you put too much power in the hands of one person, you'll call out to Hashem, but he won't answer you. You're just going to be getting what you yourselves asked for, what you, the king, asher b'chartem, that you chose. And this certainly came true in Yechezkel's time. We saw how King Yehoiakim used to use slave labor to build the Palace of Marble, even as his people suffered under the punishing taxes levied by Egypt. And Yechezkel would have been in Israel at this time. This was before he was exiled during Galut Jehoiachin. And also, Yirmiyahu told the kings over and over that it was a religious imperative not to rebel against Bavel, to submit. That is what Hashem wanted them to do. And we see this mixing of politics and religion. And it basically put a religious decision in the hands of corrupt and weak kings. And over in Sefer Melachim, we see kings make bad religious decisions at the expense of their people. That will not happen here. Says Yechezkel in Pasuchet, Le'eretz yelo la'achuza b'Yisrael, lo yanu od nisi'ai et ami, v'ha'aretz yitnu le'beit Yisrael l'shiftehem. In this land shall be for him a possession in Israel, meaning he's getting his own land that's prescribed for him by Hashem. And my princes will no longer oppress my people, but instead they will give to the people. They will be able to give and not oppress. And the king will get an achuzah just like the other people who were servants of Hashem, just like the Kohanim and just like the Levim. And he will not be able to get any more land than he already has. His land will be designated to him from Hashem. And then the real role of the Nasi, this leader, is revealed in the next two psukim, Tet and Yud, where it says, Ko amar Hashem Elokim, Rav lachem, Nisi e Yisrael, Chamas v'shod heisiru. This should be enough for you, the princes of Israel, take away violence and take away spoils. And instead, take away this idea of you taking from the people, mishpat utzdaka asu, and you should do justice and righteousness. Harimu gerushchem ne'alami. Stop dispossessing my people. Stop taking things from them, ne'om Hashem. Instead, pasukud, mo'ezne tzedek, ve'fat tzedek, ubat tzedek, yelachem. You should have just scales, and you should have just measurements, the ephah and the bat are different types of measurement. Make sure that the measurements are just. The king's role will not be large enough that he could oppress the people. And he will not set a terrible example like Yechezkel rails on the kings for doing in chapter 34 when he calls them shepherds who feed themselves instead of taking care of the sheep. Instead, the king will be a servant of the people that makes sure that their society runs justly. And Yechezkel specifies what this means. He goes into the nitty-gritty. What does it mean to have just and fair weights? This was a very popular way for the strong to oppress the weak. Who's to know if the weights are unfair? Only the merchant and Hashem know that the people are paying way too much for what they should be paying for their goods, but they have no idea. And in the time of Yeshayahu, he berates the people for putting metal into their silver and for watering down their wine. They tricked the people. They were literally corrupt. And the kings were doing this also. They need a leader like Yoshiyahu, who Yirmiyahu attests led the people in tzedek and mishpat, in justice and righteousness. And if you remember, Yechezkel opens his book counting 30 years from the time of Yoshiyahu, where he found the Sefer Torah. He was a model of a king that Yechezkel wants to follow. And he wants to make sure that we don't get corrupt kings anymore, like we have in Sefer Melachim. Instead, the kings should enforce justice and righteousness. This is the true role of the Nasi. And the Nasi will be supported himself with truma, with donations, like the Kohen. This will keep him honest. He does not need to covet and figure out how to squeeze more money out of the people. His land and his portion of money will be set. And the people also will donate towards the animals that the Nasi will bring on their behalf. Says Pasuk Tetzayin, Kol Ha'am, Kol Am Ha'aretz Yiyeh El Terumat Hazot LeNasi B'Yisrael. Everyone's job will be to donate to the Nasi. Va'al HaNasi Yiyeh Olot V'Amincha V'Nesach V'Chagim U'Chadashim V'Shabbatim Kol Mo'adei Beit Yisrael. He will bring all the korbanot on behalf of the people. And the Pasuk finishes, L'Chaper Ba'ad Beit Yisrael, to bring kapara on behalf of the people. Part of the Nasi's job will be to be a unifier of the nation before Hashem. In this capacity, he brings the Korbanot Tzibor, as he is a true representative of the Tzibor of Hashem. This is his ultimate and final role, a servant of Hashem and a servant to the people, not the opposite, not their oppressor. With this, Yechezkel completely rethinks the role of the king in the society through his prescribed area, through its separation from the Beit HaMikdash, through his specific salary from his people, through his role as an enforcer of fairness. Yechezkel reimagines the king to be what it was originally intended to be, a figure that can unite the people in the ways of Hashem and lead them to become a community of righteousness and justice. Thank you for learning together, Le'ilo Nishmas Barbara Atlas Bracha Bas Avraham. She was a beacon of light to all who knew her. Barbara's kindness and generosity had no bounds.